The first presenter is Mark Allen, who directs the Center for Stuttering Therapy at Evanston, Illinois. He received his master's and doctoral degrees from Northwestern University and has over 25 years of experience in working with people who stutter. He is the author of Speak Freely, Essential Speech Skills for School-Age Children Who Stutter. Mark.
Thanks. Sorry. I don't want that. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I'm going to start with a quick story. But before I do that, I just want to point out that this small guy sitting on the ground there is me. And the two tough-looking guys are my older brothers, John and Ted. Okay, here's the story. It took place in Albuquerque, New Mexico, back in 1972. At the time, I was 9 years old, and I was a third grader at MacArthur Elementary School. So, I was at school, on the playground, during recess, and an oversized fifth grader was amusing himself, and his little group of motley friends was amusing himself by mimicking my stuttering. Now, I had just moved to Albuquerque from a small town in Connecticut, and I got to tell you that being a new white kid from New England at a predominantly Chicano, urban, unruly public school was not easy. And being a kid who stuttered made it even less so. Well, I tried to tell this kid to stop, but I just could not get the words out. I mean, I would have loved to be able to be able to retaliate verbally, but there was no way that was going to happen. My speech was totally frozen. So, when the kid finally stopped and turned around, I went to plan B. And plan B was, I jumped in his back and I tried to strangle him. Now, this was not a good plan, because before I knew it, I was flipped over, flat on the ground, my face shoved in the dirt. Meanwhile, like this whole group of kids was like circling around us, jumping up and down, shouting and jeering, saying, to fight harder and so on and so forth. Well, given that I was pinned to the ground, with no ability to move, fighting harder really wasn't an option. So, it was just really a nightmare, and things were not going well at all until my older brothers, John and Ted, arrived, pushed through the crowd, yanked the kid off me, and then pounded him thoroughly. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not advocating violence, but this is just what happened. But my point is this. My point is that this event has remained a vivid memory for me because it demonstrates that my family has been a strong source of support to me during my life as a person who stutters. Well, one nice thing about a presentation like this, in which we share our personal stories, is that telling and hearing our stories can lead to insights about our life experiences. And in this case, how they relate to the nature and the treatment of stuttering. So, given that these stories can be instructive, this session offers an opportunity to learn from these past experiences and to inform our work with people who stutter. So, my early memories of speech therapy are a bit sketchy. I do remember being asked to repeat words and to read out loud a lot. But even from a young age, I really had the sense that my speech therapist didn't know exactly what to teach me. But that said, it was a huge relief to have a person who was invested in helping me and a place where I felt like it was okay to stutter, and that being the speech therapy room. So I'm grateful for the support and attention that these therapists gave me during my primary school years. Now, high school was a different story. During high school, I just wanted to hide my stuttering. I did whatever I could do to make people think that I was a normally fluent speaker. I avoided, I circumlocuted, I substituted, I added extra words, I lied, I did all kinds of things. And when it came to speech therapy, you know, basically I skipped my speech sessions and I avoided my therapist as much as possible. Well, I paid the price for this during my first 2 years at Amherst College. Speaking there was a nightmare. Introducing myself, asking questions in class, meeting new people, talking to my professors, all these situations were extremely difficult. Then during the summer between my sophomore and junior year, I attended a Precision Fluency Shaping Program, that is PFSP, in New Haven, Connecticut. Well, fortunately, PFSP helped me gain quite a bit of fluency. Despite this program's shortcomings, and there are many, it was empowering to learn concrete skills that helped me to speak more fluently. Well, that fall, I went to Scotland to study at the University of Edinburgh for my junior year abroad. While I was there, I practiced my speech strategies daily, and I worked hard to strengthen and to transfer my skills. So this gave me a lot more confidence about speaking. Another really helpful thing was that I was living in a completely new place where nobody knew me. So this gave me the chance to kind of redefine myself as a speaker. I felt like I could be and speak however I chose. So I adopted this new sort of speaking persona, and I became this thoughtful, confident, measured speaker. Well, whatever the reasons, I had more freedom with my speech that year in that place than at any other time in my life. However, this is only part of the story. When I returned to Amherst for my senior year of college, something happened, and I unconsciously reverted back to my pre-therapy speech patterns. It was as if old habits and old feelings were quietly reasserting themselves. My fluency skills began to break down, and my stuttering got worse. Well, this disintegration of my speech went on for months until it finally reached a climax right before graduation. Now, Amherst required that seniors take comprehensive oral final exams. This is something that I've done absolutely anything to avoid, but I had no choice. So when exam day arrived, I entered the room, sat down across from my professors, and tried to relax. When the questions began, I was mortified to find that every time I tried to answer, every time, my speech got totally stuck. It froze completely. I could not talk. I think it's fair to say that I was more ashamed that day than at any other time in my life. Well, it turned out that my professors were very understanding, and ultimately I was assessed on written work and graduated with my classmates. I only wish that I had possessed the acceptance and compassion for myself that these professors demonstrated towards me. At any rate, this experience with relapse was a wake-up call and made me realize that I had a lot to learn. Soon after graduating from Amherst, I decided to become a speech-language pathologist. So I spent 2 years taking prerequisite classes while living in New Haven, Connecticut. I also worked at Yale New Haven Hospital and at the same speech-language clinic where I attended PFSP. Some of the kids that I worked with are in this photo. Well, in time, I regrouped and I got my fluency back on track. Nevertheless, both my relapse and what I saw with clients at PFSP made it clear that stuttering therapy needs to include more than just fluency strategies. In 1987, I began my studies at Northwestern University. Working with Hugo Gregory had a major impact on my understanding of stuttering. Hugo used a multidimensional treatment approach, which included both fluency enhancing and stuttering modification strategies. Well, when I arrived at Northwestern, I tried to use my fluency skills all the time. And I was particularly careful about modifying whenever I was with Hugo. I don't think that I actually stuttered in front of him once for the first 2 to 3 weeks of school. And, you know, little did I know that all this fluency shaping was probably driving him crazy. But anyway, he never said a word about it. Then one day, Hugo must have overheard me stuttering with a secretary in the clinic, because he appeared out of nowhere, and he stood there, and he gave me this big, broad grin, this smile, and he said that he was pleased. He was pleased to say, pleased to see that I was sharing my stuttering with a secretary, and that he had been worried that I had forgotten how to stutter. Well, this was all very funny, but it led to discussions which helped me see the danger of trying to present myself as a normally fluent speaker, and that doing so probably contributed to my previous relapse. It was fine to redefine myself as a thoughtful, measured, confident speaker. That was fine. The problem was that this redefinition should have included being a speaker who stutters at times and does his best to manage it. Of course, if I was going to adhere to that more balanced definition, I needed to begin to accept myself as a person who stutters and learn to modify my stuttering directly. I also realized that I needed to take a look at my feelings and my beliefs about speaking and about stuttering. So that's what I worked on over the next several years at Northwestern and during my the beginning of my private practice. When I think of the things that have moved me along my path towards recovery, I certainly include my relationships with clients. I've learned a great deal from the people I've worked with over the years. In particular, my interactions with adults have been a strong catalyst for self-exploration and a real source of inspiration. If recovery means attaining normal fluency, I doubt that I, along with most adolescent and adult stutterers, will ever fully recover from stuttering. However, many of us will overcome the debilitating aspects of stuttering. Even though our stuttering behavior may not be completely eliminated, it'll become less and less of a handicap. It won't prevent us from engaging the world in the way that we would if we did not stutter. You might say that we will rise above and beyond our stuttering. Perhaps we should use Phil Schneider's words and call the path we're on a process of transcending stuttering rather than a process of recovering from it. This should change in perspective shifts the focus. It shifts the focus from whether or not we stutter to how we address the stuttering when it occurs and how we manage it in the broader context of our lives. Frankly, the terms that we use are not that important. What's important is that we help our clients develop behaviors and attitudes that enable them to manage their stuttering effectively, increase their fluency, accept and move beyond the challenges that their stuttering presents. And as I close here, I just want to say that I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be here today. It's a tremendous privilege to be a part of this panel, and I want to make a special thanks to Judy Custer, not only for coordinating the session, but for providing the impetus for all of us to reflect on the past so that we can better help people who stutter, both now and in the future. Thank you.